A book I read, Racial Transformations, has a subhead which says, How Latinos and Asians Are Remaking the World. It's getting at changing the discourse about race relations and class relations just being about white supremacy and the oppression of black people, even though that's definitely part of it. Could you speak to how different immigrants and different minorities are entering into these production relations in a very different way than black people who are forced into slavery and its aftermath? How are different immigrants and minorities part of and changing the dynamics, the racial dynamics within this country, and what that means for revolution and what we are trying to do?
Yeah, well, that's an important point, you know, that this is not the same country as it was, you know, in the early 19th century or even as it was in the 1960s. Watts, for example, is, you know, very significantly Latino nowadays, not just, you know, Watts, black, that's it, you know. So, but I think this is a very complex phenomenon because you have different strata of people among these different groups, both in the sense of what, where they came from and what strata they belong to in the country that they came from, and in terms of what strata people belong to once they're here, which is not often not the same. And it's different with different groups. You know, there is a whole, for example, you have, let's take, you cannot talk about people from South Asia as one lump group. You have many different strata of people, some of whom, you know, have come from the poorer sections of the country they're from, and they go into the proletariat here, or they go into certain sections of the lower petty bourgeoisie, some of whom are, you know, are professionals, you know, trained particularly in the fields of technology and so on, and they enter into those fields. Some are trained in the field of technology and enter into the proletariat because there's not enough space for everybody in the, you know, if you come here, and so it's a very complex process. But it's true that the same thing is true from, you know, from people from Latin America. For example, take an obvious example, or two very, you know, sharply opposed poles, people who've come from Cuba since the Cuban Revolution occupy a very different place than people who've come from other parts of Latin America, not only Haiti, which is an extremely sharp example, but other parts of Latin America, for example, from Mexico or from El Salvador or now from Nicaragua or whatever. So it's not, and then you have immigrants from places like, you know, South Korea. And it's very complex because all this is not simply just a question of people, you know, come to the country, you know, and whatever means they arrive, and they show up the next day, and somehow, you know, there's a direct correspondence between where they came from and where they go, and it's entirely dependent on their, you know, as the mythology goes, on their own preparation and on their own performance. And then Cuba provides an extremely sharp example. All this, you know, like if you remember during this Elian case that came up, the kid who came to the U.S. with his mother, and then there was a question of his father, you know, wanting him back in Cuba, and there was a whole battle back and forth, and you know, under the Clinton administration, you know, they finally kicked in the door of the family and took the kid out, you know, and sent him back to Cuba. And, you know, there was, and this, you know, this is an illustration of many things, one of which is whenever you have a major social crisis, you the features of many different things and many different people stand out. You know, I will never look at that actor. What the hell is his name? Somebody help me out here. Yeah, Andy Garcia. I'll never look at him the same after that, you know, because he came out in his full, as the saying goes in Cuba, gusano, you know, persona, you know, there. And, you know, and I already knew that about Gloria Estefan, but, you know, she came out in a big way. But what was interesting was in the course of this, one of these Cuban immigrants, now Cuban Americans, got up and was arguing with people, and I don't even think he quite realized the implications of what he was saying. He said, "You don't understand. Those of us who came from Cuba after Castro were promised certain special privileges. That's part of the whole package of how we came to the U.S., which is true." And so when you could look at, well, why are so many Cuban Americans prospering in Little Havana and other parts of, you know, of Miami and of the U.S.? Well, partly because they came out of the more privileged classes to begin with. Those were not entirely, but largely those, especially in the early years, who, you know, were very dissatisfied with and or were expelled by the, you know, the new Cuban government. So they had certain skills and capital, including quote-unquote intellectual capital to begin with. But they were also given a they were given privileges. They were given, were grease for them. They were given a fast track to make it because it was politically important and geostrategically important for the U.S. to do that and then to hold them up and say, look at these Cubans here, how they do so well in America compared to how the people are suffering back in the homeland of Cuba. So that's those kind of factors enter into it also. Then you get people coming from a society, for example, like South Korea, where there's still a lot of feudal influence, you know, in the family structure and everything else. And, you know, they come into the U.S. and they're not doing anything unique. They're doing what other people have done, including, by the way, as I pointed out before, black people. They start up small businesses and they put the whole family to work. You know, and it's a form of unpaid labor. I mean, they do have to support the kids so they don't starve, but they don't have to. They had to support the kids anyway, but they don't have to hire additional labor. And, if they can get together a little bit of capital and put the family together working, they can, make a certain amount of money. Then they put one or more of the kids into college. And, especially with the feudal culture, the expectations are incredibly intense. You know, during the time that I was a student at Cal, this was a little while ago now. One of these Asian women, I don't know if you know the Cal campus, but there's a big tower called the Campanile. And one of these Asian women jumped off the Campanile because she got a B. And it was like, a whole thing of both shame because of the whole feudal thing and also because this was going, she was wasting the family investment, so to speak. So you have all these kind of factors like this. Now, some of the same things happen with people coming from, some of the Latin American countries. And, the whole family pulls together or maybe, if they're all able to come together, maybe one works, a job while the others, but they're trying to set up a little business or something. There are a lot of different forms in which this happens, and sometimes it happens that people had a certain position and a certain amount of, small amount of capital, including quote-unquote intellectual capital, in other words, education, and they can make use of it in the U.S., and sometimes they have it and they can't. They're just in the proletariat anyway. But as I was pointing out, you do have this whole phenomenon that, like, you had a black petty bourgeoisie in sort of traditional forms doing the same kind of thing back in the 50s and 60s. Well, the guy who owned the drugstore lived in the community. The guy who owned the grocery store lived in the community. But then you got this polarization among black people where the large parts of the black middle class, if they got more money, they went out of those neighborhoods, and they often went into different parts of the economy. They may not have remained, in other words, the next generation, the sons and daughters may have gone to college and become professionals instead of being grocers or drugstore owners. And the businesses, quote unquote, that had developed in these inner city neighborhoods, both black but also Latino, and we'll get to that in a second, the quote unquote businesses, a lot of them are the illegal businesses of a drug trade, which replicate in this sort of a somewhat distorted form the small scale, even some times larger scale, capitalist enterprises of the society as a whole, but distorted because they're illegal and under that kind of pressure and they're in, inner city and ghetto conditions. So it's not like none of this ever developed among black people. It's not like this is a new phenomenon. We have these immigrants coming in there doing what black people never did, but things have changed, and there are these sort of, interstices, if you will, spaces in parts of the economy where you can get some of this petty production and trade going. And, that's encouraged to a certain degree for ideological and political reasons. And also, there's just enough wealth in the society for some people to be able to do that, even as immigrants. But then you have whole strata of immigrants coming from, for example, look at Vietnam. You have some people who were like Nguyen Cao Ky was the vice premier of the puppet government in South Vietnam, a hated figure, in the military and the government. And he ended up coming to the U.S. at the end of the Vietnam War and running a chain of liquor stores, last I heard. You know, and but then people like him brought with them, a whole network which was supported for a certain period of time by the U.S. ruling class. And then you had a whole other strata of people coming out of Vietnam, especially later, unfortunately, the Vietnamese Revolution, you know, largely because of its own revisionism and the fact that it tied itself up completely with and was dependent on the Soviet Union, it started sputtering and stagnating, and you know, the life of the people became very difficult as well as somewhat repressive. A lot of the more basic masses got on boats, and many of them ended up in the U.S., and many of them are in extremely impoverished and exploited conditions. So you have a very wide variety and diversity when you talk about immigrants. But it is true that given the globalization, one of the features of globalization is, and this is referred to in Notes on Political Economy, that you have a combination at one and the same time of extremely high-tech production and corresponding production relations within the overall capitalist framework, and extremely, what's sometimes called Fordist after Henry Ford and his assembly line system, extremely labor-intensive forms of exploitation. Like you have sweatshops in Los Angeles, the Garment Center, in New York, less so than you used to, but still. And you have these things coexisting, first of all, in the world scale. Much of the latter of the labor-intensive stuff, you know, the quote-unquote Fordist production, goes on in the third world. And you see this even within a particular industry or in the production of a particular product. For example, computers. You have people like, for example, in India writing computer programs. They farm it out to the people in India because they can pay them less than they'd have to pay comparable strata in the U.S., so they farm that out there. And at the same time, in other parts of Asia, you have women, you know, working with acid and other things, making and ruining their eyes and their, you know, and their hands and everything, and their health overall, making the tiny parts that constitute the components of computers. So you have, even in the same product, you have both very high-tech element and also this, you know, very labor-intensive exploitation. And you have it on a world scale where most of it is, or a lot of it is increasingly being shipped out of the U.S., but you also have it, you know, you have sections of the U.S. economy where this is still going on, where there's still a significant role for labor and production, and you have a lot of immigrants going into those lower tiers of the proletariat, if you will, which are partly still, you know, left over from what was and partly newly created by the shifting in technology. And so you have what I'm trying to say is you have a, you know, this whole pastiche, you have a whole very mixed, you know, mosaic or whatever metaphor you want to use when you're talking about immigrants. But there is no question that if in terms of population, there is this definite trend which people like Pat Buchanan have, you know, raised a big alarm about, that the whole basically European white core of the country and character of the country is in jeopardy, both because of this immigration coming from places like Asia and Latin America of various kinds, even the parts of the professionals and middle strata and conservative business types worry him from that standpoint. Can the society keep its identity and hold together? So you have that danger, but also as he jumps up and down about it, it's interesting how these reactionaries find connection between things. He's extremely upset that the birth rate among white, you know, people of European origin is much lower than people who come, for example, from Latin America. And, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag because, you know, Buchanan once, you know, he denounces white women in the professional classes who have abortions as basically traitors to the white race and to the European character of the, you know, of America. And he talks about how this is a phenomenon in all the, you know, Western, quote-unquote, advanced capitalist countries. The birth rate among the European population is going down while people are coming in from the Islamic countries and having lots of kids, and people are coming in from Latin America and parts of Asia and to the U.S. having lots of kids. And this is adding to the trend of the population going away from being predominantly European-based. So it's very complex because this is where ideological questions get mixed in, because if, you know, part of the reason why people from Latin America have larger families is owing to superstructural factors, which in turn have had some material base. You come from a largely agricultural way of life. Having a lot of children can be, you know, an efficient way to people to work the land and so on. But it's been, you know, and that's been the character of feudal society. And, for example, Catholic doctrine, you know, which has insisted on no birth control, you know, has been sort of a reflection and reinforcement of that sort of feudal thing. But they've still insisted on it even in today's world. Now, if you actually had, you know, if you would think Buchanan, who's a Catholic, among other things, you know, is sort of stuck here on this point because, you know, let's have more abortions and birth control for all these immigrants coming in, but less of it or none of it for all these European women. But he can't exactly advocate that, so he's sort of stuck, on, you know, on the horns of his own dilemma there. But all this is part of the mix of, and yes, it's true, population-wise, and in terms of key section to the proletariat. It's not that, quote-unquote, you know, Marlon Brando was on Larry King a few years ago. He got in lots of trouble for some comment he made, which wasn't, you know, he made a comment about how, talking about Hollywood, about how the people who have a lot of influence in Hollywood, who are significantly, to a significant degree, Jewish, produce terrible stereotypes of other races and peoples. And he said, you know, they really ought to know better than that. And then everybody jumped on him for being anti-Semitic, which wasn't his point at all. It was not like Jews are evil. He was saying of all people, people with the historical experience of the Jewish people ought to know better than to turn out a lot of the crap they do in Hollywood. And he got, but his main point was to go on there and talk about what was happening. It was in response to a particular incident that happened to this immigrant woman, whose name I believe was Alicia Saltero, who was jumped on by the L.A. County sheriffs and brutalized in plain sight. It was sort of a Rodney King thing. And so he was getting on there and he was talking. He said, well, you know, let's face it, how many white people are going to pick strawberries? And then he said, and black people these days have sort of evolved a situation of making their way through the world however they do, so who ends up picking the strawberries? Well, it's not a question of, you know, the agriculture labor is done overwhelmingly by immigrants, many of them quote-unquote illegal, especially from Mexico, but from other places, but it's, and, you know, sometimes from the Philippines or whatever, but it's not a matter of some innate quality. You know, I once had a very backward relative who was into the agricultural sector, and I had big arguments all the time, and he used to deliberately try to provoke me, and he'd say, Bobby, he would say, don't you just think that some people like Mexicans are just sort of, it's easier for them to bend over and pick up crops? I mean, he knew that I would go, you know, through the roof, right? But, you know, it's not, that's not what is going on. It's that, like, you know, because of the historical evolution of not just production relations, but social relations, there has evolved a situation in which a lot of these jobs like that in the fields and in the lower tier of the proletariat, for a complex of reasons, best suits the interests of the imperialists to have immigrants do a lot of these jobs in the proletariat, including because, leaving aside even other superstructural factors, people without rights are much more easily exploitable and disposable. And if you have immigrants, in particular ones who are quote-unquote illegal, they don't really want to get rid of these people. There are some, you know, fanatics who are, you know, taking that position, but the prevailing wisdom, even in the reactionary core of the ruling class, is not to entirely get rid of these people. That would be a real problem, but it is to control it. Partly they raise all this specter about controlling the border and terrorism, but that's not the main thing. The main, you know, there's some concern about that, but there's a very, you know, important economic concern or consideration, which is that you can control this labor force if you can control the immigration, and you can exploit them much more effectively and regulate that, and, you know, kick them out of the country if it's work is seasonal, as, for example, in agriculture. That's, you know, let's reinstitute the Bracero program. You know, Phil Oakes had that song back in the 60s, Welcome to California. You know, it's about the Braceros, where the friendly farmers will take care of you. You know, let's reinstitute programs like that where we bring people in, exploit them, and then kick them out when it's not the season, when we need their work on such a scale. So for these kind of reasons, it's worked out that a big section of the lower tier of the proletariat, the lower, deeper sections, is increasingly immigrants. It's not only that, by the way, though. I mean, if you travel around, if you go to cities, for example, that are historically black in population, you'll see a lot of black people occupying those positions. If you go to small towns, I haven't been able to do this very much, but if, you know, from what I've heard indirectly in a little bit, you know, you see here and there, you'll see a lot of white people, including, by the way, a lot of immigrants from Eastern Europe now. I mean, this is how complex the world is. The Soviet Union dissolved. Things, and the economy, you know, went into real difficulty. A lot of the social safety net that they had for women, for example, even under the revisionist rule, was destroyed. So you have a large numbers of immigrants. Now you go and see a lot of these lower-tier proletarian jobs are sometimes American-born white people, often women, and often these immigrants from Central and Eastern Europe, the ones who haven't been caught up in the sex trade. So this is a complex, you know, pattern here, but it's true. I mean, you know, remaking America, I mean, is certain truth on a certain level that some of the patterns of, you know, who's doing the work and who makes up the population are changing significantly, but this is all still within the same framework, and to really remake it is going to require the kind of revolution we're talking about, in which, however, with all the contradictoriness of this, of these growing numbers of immigrants, particularly those in the proletariat, but even those in the middle strata, are going to play a very important role. So this is a different historical relationship to the accumulation of capital in the U.S., but an extremely important one, especially in the present day.